Ching ching, bling bling, let's cut the chatter. In today's episode, we talk life and basketball. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others, and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Deck the halls with Tucci Talks. On today's show, he'll speak to jocks. They are smarter than you may think. So have a listen and a drink. I hope everyone is in a festive mood. Welcome again to Tucci Talks, Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. We are winding down season number one, and I'm excited to be having a holiday special talking life and basketball with many of the young men I coached back in the day. I haven't seen many of them in some time, and it was a special time in many of our lives. I'm excited to take a look back and also a peek forward. Before we do that, let's recap last week. If you're interested in looking back at the different episodes of season one, head over to TucciTalks75.com and navigate at your leisure. What did I learn from having Craig on the podcast last week? Just like everything we've been discussing along the way, authentic relationships is life's most satisfying experience. It's no different in real estate. The industry is very saturated, so it's up to you to make sure you find the right agent for your needs. My older brother is a lawyer, and he deals with a lot of agents that are not worth their salt. So do your due diligence, but a quality agent, in my opinion, supersedes any money you can save for yourself. I don't mind paying for services as long as the service I'm getting has tremendous value. A big thank you to Craig for sharing his time. On to today's show. My next guests have been instrumental in my development as a coach as well as a human being. It really is true that you can find yourself in the service of others. I, along with fellow coach and colleague David Simmons, helped shape the paths of these young men. You really never know what impact you have on another life until years later. These boys were respectful, hardworking, committed to excellence, and above all, we were all a family, navigating the difficult times and cherishing the joyous ones. It is with great pleasure that Tucci Talks welcomes, in no particular order, Andre Woodruff, Clint Velardo, Asari Sarpong, Matthew Scott, Sukhpreet Grewal, and special co-host David Simmons. So welcome to Tucci Talks. It's great to see you guys. How are we all doing?
Doing good.
This is a blast from the past. I see you guys, you're men now with full-grown beards. And you still
look old.
What's that?
Not Asari. So this is a bit patchy.
Yeah. This is a great way for us to usher in Christmas. This is a Tucci Talks holiday special. I coached you guys back in high school. You're all men now. some of you with your own families. So it's very fitting that I title this episode Life and Basketball. So let's do this. Let's talk here on Tucci Talks. What do you guys say?
Works for me.
And we have another appearance from Asari. Hopefully he does better this time around than he did the last time around. So did you guys know one another prior to high school basketball? Because we're going way back. I coach you guys in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, a couple of us did, actually. So I guess I'll kick it off. So I knew Asari from grade 6. And I knew Sook, I guess, when we were in grade 8. And yeah, I've known Clint the longest. I've known Clint, actually, since JK or SK. So I feel like pretty much the core I knew, minus Matt. I met Matt in grade 9, of course.
And do you guys still hang out?
All the time. Minus Clint, because Clint's a bit further away, so we don't get to hang out, obviously, as much. But, yeah, I see these guys on the regular.
Who do you see on the regular?
Well, for the past 4 months, Asari's been coming over to to our place every Friday. So I see Asari every week. I'm just getting back from a cottage trip with Matt and Adrian. So just saw them this past weekend. I plan to see Sook in a couple of weeks and spent a cottage trip with him about a couple of weeks ago as well. So,
and you have a family, don't you, Andre?
I do now. Yeah. Our son just turned 1.
Wow. How old are you guys? 30, 31, 32, right?
31.
31.
31.
Yeah.
Where did all this time go?
Flies, we're hoping you could tell us.
Because our last season together was 2007, right?
Yeah.
That was it. So
yeah, I don't know, man. I retired from coaching basketball, and
that's a conversation we need to have. Why?
Yeah, I always wanted to ask that.
Yeah, about why I retired.
Yeah.
Well, so in the last year, so I when I had. And Asari knew that team. You came to watch the last year we won the championship with those juniors, didn't you come?
Yeah, I came to watch a few games that year.
So anyway, I was gonna coach for 4 years, and I was coaching them in grade 9, 10, 11, and then I was gonna coach them in 12. That's the year they went to OFSA, right, Simmons? Didn't they lose in the silver medal game?
Yeah, that would be correct.
So anyway, that last year there was another coach who came from another school who texted me over the summer, who was the junior coach. And he said, you're busy with a lot of stuff. Can I take over the team? And I said, as long as you don't ignore the junior program, you can have it.
Can I just interject, Dave?
Absolutely.
One of the things too, is that you were feeling kind of burnt out too, because the reality is that we dabbled in the girls program,
right?
And we had soccer also on top of
right.
it. And our soccer program started to turn around. We had some really good teams, and when you have a family on top of it, Andre, as you know, it's hard to juggle.
Yeah, and I knew we were going to be good, but I did my job with those kids. I taught them what I wanted to teach them, which was how to play basketball. And that's what I tried to do with you guys. And we had a lot of great memories. And I just want to share something that Clint texted me a couple years ago, where we just had a quick conversation over text. And Clint, I want to know what your thoughts are on this. Okay.
Sure.
I saved this. I screenshotted this and I saved it. And then I just wrote it out now. We were having a conversation about life and how different and how we grow. And some of you guys don't play basketball anymore. Where at that time, as a 14-year-old kid, Sari and I did a episode where that was the most important thing in his life at that moment. But you said to me, yes, this is quote, yes, very grateful for that experience, which I will never forget. I appreciate it more today as I am older and the years have passed. I told my kid that you were the person that changed my life, end quote. So this person, you're a social worker now, right, Clint? We can get into a little correct. Bit of what you do.
Oh, you bet.
And you were taking care of this particular kid?
Yeah, so just back then I was a caseworker. So it's part of my role is I'm a public guardian for kids in care. So kids that have been neglected and I guess I guess, abandoned from their parents and that came into government care. And I just, I find that a lot of those kids don't have that role model, or they don't have that support network. So I was just like really grateful for that experience. And like, really just like, I became a social worker because of you, like, because of that whole idea of just wanting to make a difference in someone's life, exactly what you did for me. And just wanted, to do that just for that one person. So
how important is it for young kids? Like when you're, let's go back to when we're 14 years old. Okay. Let's go back, Sukhpreet, to the first tryout. You guys are in grade 9. I don't know you guys. You come to the first tryout. Do you remember that, Sukhpreet?
Oh, I remember it clear as day. You didn't know me, but I knew a lot about you already, because before high school, I was very close with Daniel Curry.
Okay.
And Corey. So like I would see them and Bird like very, very regularly. So
who's Curry, Bird again? Who's Bird?
Joshua Burgess.
Oh yeah.
Burgess, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh God.
That's right. The Bird. So go on.
No, I remember Curry would always, like, we would play maybe 3-4 times a week almost. I'd play with Curry a week. And so he would always tell me some of the stuff that you would always look out for. So like, I think I started early to try and understand what I needed to do to like excel and play on the team, because my brother got cut, which I still don't make fun. I still haven't stopped making fun of him till today. But yeah, no. So I remember that, because I remember you started a tryout with the suicide sprints, I think it was. And some guys actually started walking out the gym.
That's it.
That's a little bit of a jerk move on my part, wasn't it?
No, I loved it. I was like, for me, I was like, this is why I came here to play. Because I would speak to, I think you remember he played Akeem Sween from Applewood. So I was always deciding, because he was also a good friend of mine before I joined. So I was, even by grade 8, I was trying to decide whether I was coming to Applewood or going to Xavier. And Curry convinced me that Xavier was a better program.
How?
And then when I showed up day one and we ran sprints, I was like, yes, this is the real deal. So no, I loved it. I loved it.
Andre, you didn't play much in grade 9, did you?
No, I sat like at the back of the bench.
You made the team. You made the team. You didn't play much. No, and I just want to say, I just want people to know, I even told Coach Simmons this at that time. When I saw you come back in grade 10, I didn't even recognize the player.
Really?
What happened to you? Well, like what happened in that season?
To be honest, I had zero confidence. So I think making the team in grade 9, because I think there was only a handful of us that made it in comparison to the amount that actually tried out. So making the team in grade 9 and then feeling as though I was a veteran on the team in grade 10, I think really helped out a lot. And obviously playing with these guys throughout the summer, that helped as well. And playing with the older guys.
So are you saying your mindset changed in grade 10?
Yeah, that was a huge part of it.
That's amazing. That's amazing to see kids, because we see it too. You take it into adult life, always having to roll with the punches.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it.
And having a certain mindset. And let's face it, we all have challenges. I mean, each one of us has their own struggle with life. And you learn stuff from that? Do you take stuff that you learned all the way back from when you were a kid and you apply it to some of the situations, whatever the situation is, do you apply it to today? Anybody want to take that?
Yes, I'll go. I mean, some of these guys can vouch for me. The way that I am now is completely different from the perception that was always, the way people always thought about me then. I'm a lot more in control of my own emotions. I think that's kind of, that's probably the thing that I was least in control of when I was a kid, right? Like I understood that I never understood what I was truly feeling, but I just knew how I had to release whatever my frustrations were.
You were the first guy that I ever swore to as a coach.
Yeah.
Do you remember that or no?
Of course. Yeah, no, I always remember.
I think this is how I remember it. We were at the Gates tournament. And all you were doing was complaining, and we're trying to battle in a game. Things aren't going well, and your emotions were coming out, but negative, very negative. And that's the perception that we had. And Coach Simmons and I would always have a lot of discussions, because you guys are like, you know, you're plants that need to be, you need to be molded and shaped, and you don't want to give up on a person. And I said, sit your ass down. And I was like, I was F bomb after F bomb. And I just had it, because at that moment I felt like I gotta match your anger with some intensity, so you can just kind of like, I don't know. Fun. I just felt like that's at that moment, maybe it was wrong. I don't know, but you're the first person that I ever swore at, first kid that I ever swore at. And you weren't the last after that, but
that makes me feel better. That's okay.
but you know what? Coach Simmons and I were very proud that you made it with us and you grew, because there was a lot of times where we were considering cutting you loose. And we're just so happy that was a championship for us too, keeping the group together and showing how, and we truly had a love for each other. This is what I want listeners to understand. I never won a championship with you guys. I won a championship with that other team, but I always had a love for this group. I don't know, maybe if it was because of the time in my life, but we just had a trust. And I think that's what Clint was alluding to when you talk about that mentoring and that kids need. And if I was that, and Coach Simmons, if we were those guys, I mean, that's why we did it.
Well, in part too, I mean, there were a lot of teams that were envious of our team, because they could look at the team and see that there was a genuine love and an appreciation. And it's like families, there could be disputes. But I mean, how many times at the end of the day where Sue Creep be there and he'd be saying, oh, we're going to play just one more game of horse. And it would be 7:30 at night, and we would still be there, and Sukri would still be bitching that he didn't get the last shot in. You know,
Simmons, you reminded me of something. Can I interject?
Absolutely.
You know, when I realized these guys were special, I don't know what year it was. It could have been grade 11. I don't remember, but this was an exhibition game at Mount Carmel, and exhibition game. We're just preseason. And I think it was Sukhpreet. Sukhpreet, was it you? Yeah, does this kind of remember? Do you know where I'm going with this?
I remember this exactly.
We're in a timeout. It's just an exhibition game. And Sukhpreet is fuming, like steam is coming out of his ears. He goes, if we're not ready to bleed here today, I want you guys out of here. We got to bleed. And I'm like, my goodness, these guys are ready to play. This is just preseason. Oh, man. I go, this group is special.
So he used to see the same thing at McKechnie too, so it's really no difference.
Where did that come from, Suk? Was it like, okay, you're a point guard. Just to give the listeners an idea, you're not tall. You think you could beat anybody. I'm talking back in the day. It wouldn't matter. Where did that come from?
I think what's so special about our team is everyone came from such a past, and whether people liked it or not, that past came forward in how they played or the way they carried themselves. And that's why I think whether Clint says it, and I'm sure we'll all echo it, is you and Simmons had a huge impact in shaping our, I would say, lives and the way we carry ourselves today. I'm sure everyone here would agree to that, because for me, I mean, I've known Matthew and Clint since I was like 5. And then Dre I picked up in grade 8, and Asari was grade 9. But everyone kind of knew each other's backgrounds. And like, I think Clint, you and I were very similar. There was a lot of issues at home. I would say a lot. And
You're talking about coming from an immigrant background, right?
Yeah, and just even household issues sometimes, potentially, you know, not living at home, living with Sari, there's lots of things going on. So, you know, for me, I think there was a place of playing with anger, because there was a lot of anger outside the court with things going on. So a lot of it was just being channeled into basketball. And I think rightly or wrongly so, now you look back and you're like, you know, how you treated your teammates, or, you know, how you try to motivate others was just wasn't because you grew up in a certain environment. Right. And you thought that that was the only way.
But how do we do it now? Like, a lot of people going through COVID, personal issues, mental illness, that's a big thing now.
Yeah.
How do they channel it?
It's tough. You know, I would love to hear what these guys think, but I feel like for all
because let's tell the listeners, you have a newborn.
I do, yes.
You have a one. And how old is she now?
She's 5 months. A few days. And yeah, like, you know, some people look at me now and they're like, you're so different. And I think Matthew just said that earlier. It's like a lot of it, honestly, is because if basketball wasn't there to channel that anger, then who knows where it would have been channeled. And obviously you guys grew us like plants, because I think you saw the bigger picture and you saw, well, there's something to be molded from everyone. And, you know, you realize that now when you're older, when you see kids play and you see a certain way they play and how they carry themselves, like, it's bigger than just playing basketball. There's obviously, it's a depiction of where they come from and how they're raised and what may be going on outside the court. So,
yeah. And that's the job, I think, of Simmons and I are educators first and foremost. And I think that's the role of the adult is not about, and part of the reason why I retired too from coaching basketball, it became more always about winning. And I said, this doesn't fit.
No,
your style. Yeah.
It doesn't fit my style.
We got really lucky. I consider myself really lucky because, like, these guys are still my best friends. There's really no one else I'd pick up the phone to call if I wanted to hang out with someone. And like, you know, it really was bigger than basketball. Cause I think a lot of it was less even about playing and more so spending time with your friends, which was more family than anything else. So I feel as though that bond was bound to continue to last beyond.
Did you guys
years.
Share a lot of personal? See, I wasn't, I always allowed you guys to be players. And did you guys have hung out a lot, obviously outside of the court. Did you share a lot of your issues, your internal issues that were going on in your own life?
I do want to kind of jump in and say something based off what Sook was saying earlier is like,
go for it.
Kind of just piggyback off what you were saying as well. We were fucking knuckleheads. We were all idiots at some point in time throughout our high school career. And for you to have the patience and the wherewithal to kind of stick through it and still be that figure to kind of lead us in the right direction, I think we all are thankful and appreciative of that now. And especially for Sook and I having little ones, like it's not easy to kind of always be in the frame of mind to be coaching and to be teaching and to be leading in all the right capacities. So
no, and that's why I think you guys need to understand you got to care for yourself. That whole idea of self-love, it's okay. You're going to fail at stuff. You're not going to please everybody. And and you're going to lose just like you lost in basketball.
But I would suggest to everyone talking here that one of the things in terms of the evolving or the evolution of a team is when you come together and you're willing to show your greatest vulnerabilities. And there were times we had, I don't want to say specific situations, but people will know. We had the rim rocker where one individual had family issues specific, and that led them to question whether they wanted to even be part of the team. We had the situation where we had the adversity of losing in grade 9, where we had something taken away from us that we felt we rightfully earned. And we even had the opportunity of going and breaking bread on the day that we were going to our championship game.
Great story. Share this story, Simmons. This is a great story. Go for it.
And, you know, so we go there, and I'm Black Canadian, raised by West Indian parents, but fortunate enough to have gone through the cycle of immigrant parents. And we got there, and person said to us, how do I order food? And so, well, here, there's a menu. What do I do? Well, just see what is on the menu and just order it. How do I use these utensils, the fork and knife? And it was interesting because there was never any sort of laughter or snickering by anyone on the team or any individual. And everyone had their different ways that they had been raised, that they maybe had that opportunity. And it was just subtle. And it always stuck with me that we came out of there. That's besides the game and besides the crying that went on after the game, when we got back to 11:30 in the gym that night, I just remembered that. And I remembered, you know, just how rich that was, that the person said, you know what, I don't know. And can you help me? And that was what our team was about. By the time we got to grade 10, there was a solidified process that if it was in school and sometimes, you know, coach, I'm not doing as well as I should be in this subject. I don't know what to do. Or this teacher's pissing me off. There was opportunity and we were willing to advocate for you. But more importantly, you guys were willing to advocate for yourselves. And that was a huge leap.
I remember that night too, because so we were playing just before, these guys are in grade 9. Corey's in grade 10. We take him to dinner and we play an unbelievable game. And the whole idea of what people can do when they work together, I remember calling a timeout and I had Clint, you're going to take the last shot. And you passed it off to Sukhpreet in the corner. This kid has onions, ice in his veins, hits a corner three, but like any dumb 14-year-old, starts going to the crowd and freaking showing his jersey. And we're still, I don't know how much time is left. We're still in the game. I go, will you get back on defense? Do you remember that, Sukhpreet?
Oh, yeah.
How important was that shot for you? Like, that was clutch for a grade 9 kid.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It didn't feel that way. It just felt like another shot, quite honestly. And not, that doesn't sound like a bragging moment, but it felt great in the moment, but it didn't feel like.
But then when you hit it, you acted like it wasn't just any other shot.
I know, that's true. Yeah, that's true. You know, I don't know. I feel like.
Clint, what made you pass it off? Because it was, the play was for you. And I think a defender came at you and I'm guessing you just saw Sukhpreet in the corner.
I think just back then, like at that time, I thought I made the right play. Like a circle was open and I trusted my brother that he was going to make that shot.
That's what I was going to say. Trust, yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying about when you trust one another. I mean, you're going to have failure, but you can always overcome. And I remember that game, which again, was a little bit of it was unfortunate, but we kind of got slighted in that game. But talking to you guys after the game was one of the hardest post-game speeches. And I wish somebody would have filmed that. But it was the hardest thing I've ever done because I knew how important it was. And I understood, being an older person, that this wasn't the end. And it was great to see, like Coach Simmons said, that carried us for the next few years. And I think that was part of our... Do you think that was part of bringing that special bond?
Well, I was going to say, too, is that... We talk about that grade 9 year because we basically got ripped off. But really, the bigger feat is, how the hell did we compete with Campion when there were 7 feet guys the second year?
The second year, yeah.
Like, I mean, you guys were just phenomenal.
And Clint was a 3-point away hitting the rim from winning.
Yeah.
Andre steals it. We're down 7 with like under a minute to go. We come back. Andre steals it, gives it to Clint. Clint has a chance to win. That just speaks to the mindset and the attitude. And I believe that it took this type of group in order to kind of do these things. So what I want to say is, anybody out there who's listening, it really is a team effort in life. We're not, this is called life in basketball. We're using basketball as like a microcosm, but you really need that unique bond, and you got to put your ego aside to succeed in life. And I it's okay to be vulnerable. And I think that's the key. So I know that, is it just Andre and Siegfried who have kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're having a bad day. It's okay if you don't feel like you're the best father at this moment. You think we thought we were the best coaches all the time? Never. It was always an evolution. It was always learning. It was always struggling. It was always questioning all the time. And then you just come and with an attitude that we're going to work hard and we're going to do our best. Did you guys ever, Asari and I spoke about this. Did you guys ever taunt Asari for not making the team in grade 9? Because in the episode when he came on, he was talking about how devastated he was. And obviously I was the reason for that. So he blamed me. But then he realized real quick that if he wants to make the team, he has to make it. He's got to earn it through hard work. Did you guys ever bother him? Did you make fun of him?
Go ahead, Andre.
Oh, my bad, Sook. So just quickly, this quick anecdote. So I remember walking home with him actually after I found out that I made the team. Sorry, obviously found out that he didn't. We walked home. I walked back to his place and I was downstairs watching TV. And Asari's upstairs in his room, and I could hear these noises. I was like, what is that noise? And so I go upstairs and into his room, and he's crying. He's punching the wall. I'm like, what's going on, man? Like,
He said that.
He was upset. He was upset. And I think, like, almost immediately after that, obviously talked him down, he was in the basement practicing his dribbling. That, like, half an hour after, he got it out of his system. And if you talk to him now about it, I think it was all for the better. I don't think Asari would be, if we're just talking basketball, I don't think Asari would be the basketball player he is today if it wasn't for that time he got cut in grade 9. And beyond that, I don't think he would have like the persistence and perseverance that he has now if it wasn't for the lessons he was taught not making that team in grade 9.
Asari, jump in here.
Honestly, couldn't have said it better myself, because that year, not making the team, I just learned, I guess, to be realistic with myself, right? And I feel like a lot of people aren't realistic with themselves. And so that understanding, I think, has been very beneficial to me in everything that I do, right? Whether it's work, even in relationships, understanding where your flaws are, where you made the mistake, and then basically improving on those.
Oh, if I'll add on to that just a little, because I remember when Asari didn't make it, we were in the same religion class. And after Asari would always come to my house and play. And I would make a point of it in grade 9 and 10 to just hammer down on him when we played one-on-one. And I remember telling him once, I said, I'm only hard because I think you actually are going to get really good. And I remember this because this is my favorite. Asari's high school journey of basketball is probably one of my favorites, because it reminds me of like a professional story when I watched the Michael Jordan documentary.
The
Last Dance.
Oh, that was great. That was a great one.
There's one story that happens, and it makes me laugh all the time because it makes me think of this. Because I remember I would sit there and be like, sorry, like, if you shoot like this, and I remember showing him how to shoot, because I was like, that's the one thing I did well. I wasn't athletic or anything. And Asari goes to me and he's practicing, and he's like, Suki, one day I'm going to start for the team. And
what grade is this? Summer. What grade?
Was that grade 10 summer? Could have been grade 9 summer or grade 10 summer. And he's like, look, one day I'm going to start for the team. And I was like, sure. And I was like, I'm pretty sure he's coming for my spot, so sure, that's not gonna happen. But I was like, sure, I'll let him have this one. And then it was for grade 12, Ashari showed up and he started playing way better than I was playing. And all of a sudden, when he did start the first game and I was on the bench, he looked over and he smiled. And it makes me think of that story when Michael Jordan went to practice with that. I mean, they call it the greatest practice of the USA practice ever, where Jordan came in and he goes to Bird and Magic and he's like, boys, there's a new sheriff in town. It always makes me think of that story because, like, it honestly goes to show, like, it taught me a lot because it showed me that just as a bystander, because one, I think what was special about our team is you were talking about how, like, people felt open to ask questions. Like, what was it, whether that restaurant moment, people would say, like, how do you order from a menu? But I think a lot of it stems from we felt so comfortable with each other and still to this day to just truly be ourselves. I feel like whether I'm in a work setting or I'm with people other than these four guys, you always have kind of a guard up and you're not truly yourselves and you can act as stupid as you want. Cause at the end of the day, this is like your family. You can literally act however you want. And that's how I always feel around them. And that story was special because, like, for me, you watch someone who really wasn't that good at all and then is probably better than all of us now. And at that time in grade 12 was definitely better than myself. So then you look at it and it teaches you a lot because it's like, you don't have to start off good. You just have to end off good. And so it was a good lesson for me because at that time I kind of started tapering off and not caring anymore. But nonetheless, it definitely taught me a lot because I could see how good he had gotten over 4 years. It was remarkable. And that, I mean, I started playing when I was 5. And I feel as though he picked up a basketball when he was in grade 9. And anyways, it's one of my favorite stories. Quite honestly.
That does speak to the fact that it's never too late if you actually really want it bad enough. And I think that's what has to be understood, that anybody can, but you got to want it.
That's what I got out of his. That's quite honestly. And sometimes I took it with me going to university and in later stages of my life, because it truly did teach me, like, you don't have to start off good if relative to your peers.
Now, Clint, I know earlier you said that you're a social worker.
Yep.
You guys are fortunate because you speak, you're still in touch. You're still very close. Like Sukhpreet just said, I feel right at home. Like, this is my family. How do you help kids who don't have any of this support? I mean, as humans, just human contact, human connection, that's what keeps us going.
I think for me, it's just about just sharing my experiences and my learning experiences, like from this group, like as a team, my learning experiences, like with each one individually.
No, I'm saying, do you have kids under your care right now? You're living in Alberta, Edmonton. You're living near Edmonton?
That's correct.
Do you have any kids right now that are really going through a tough time?
Not right now, but before, like when I was in that role, like it was like all the time. So just like trying to support and just like trying to share just like my experiences and knowledge of what like kind of helped me, like through my life, and just like sharing that with them.
Did that help them?
Yeah.
Like, did you feel like, are they trusting you, or is this how you build trust? Is that all it has to, you just have to unleash the whole idea of their trusting in you.
Yeah. Like, and I think just like, as far as like for trust, it's just about developing a relationship with them. And I know just being a social worker, it's almost impossible to make a difference for every kid because I encounter like so many, but just my goal was just to make a difference in one. And like when that kid shared that feedback with me, like I felt that I made a difference. So,
right.
Yeah.
Andre, what are you doing right now? What's your job?
Yeah, so I work at a tech company. I'm in sales.
Oh, okay.
At a tech company. So I don't really get the same gratification that Clint would get on a day-to-day basis. But I think for me...
But you work in a team environment or no?
I do, yeah. It's obviously different now with the whole work from home setting.
Right.
But it was very much so a team environment, and I'm an individual contributor, but obviously to the bigger picture. But I always approach things as like a team sport. These are the guys like I would go through the fire with, and so when I'm at work or when I'm, you know, with my son or something like that, it's always an approach of, okay, how will this individual best receive this advice, or how will this individual best understand what it is that I'm trying to teach them or show them? And so for you, with so many different personalities, like I'm looking at who's on this call right now, and a mix of personalities and your ability, and Coach Simmons' ability to kind of get through to each of us on an own, on our own individual level is,
but I have a bone to pick with you, Dre. I have a bone to pick.
What's up?
I'm still not over it.
The fight in the change room?
I don't remember that. What happened in the change room?
Oh boy. Asar had to hold me back.
For me?
I can't remember.
You were gonna fight me?
I think you mentioned that I was out of hand or out of line or something, and you said you were gonna call my dad. And I was like, all right, give him the phone, man. Give him the phone. And I was going to step to you. And Asari had to step in between the two of us. And he had to talk me down. I can't remember what it was about. I think maybe
my bone, instead of me. Yeah, my bone to pick was when you left. And I was like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
What? Where is this dude? Yeah, we talk about how we're supposed to be here for one another and support each other. I understand mistakes happen or what, but do you remember what happened in that situation?
Yeah, of course. Hindsight is 20/20, and I look back at it now, and I went to Florida with an ex girlfriend who's obviously not in my life anymore. And I think about it now. The moments and the memories that came from that game in particular, hearing about it when I got back home was gut wrenching.
Right.
It was like, what did I left to with my now ex-girlfriend to miss all of that with my team and to share that moment with my team? That was a huge letdown.
It's good though to know that, you know, we're human. We make mistakes and there are consequences. In your case, it was missing out on those memories, like you say, and it's all about learning. But I always thought that we were able to stay together. And when you did that, it was like, you know how you talk about as a coach, try to keep the team together. It's like, what did I do wrong? That's what was going through my mind. But at the end of the day, you guys were kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think back at it now, and we honestly were kids. Like I said it and I meant it. We were all knuckleheads. I don't know how you dealt with it on a good basis.
Basketball was the platform that I used. Not about basketball, was to basically teach, build character. You learn a lot of valuable skill sets, be on time, work hard, sacrifice. I mean, if you really want to do well, are you going to put your own needs, your teammates' needs ahead of yours? And that's why I kind of saw the writing on the wall with this group. And I didn't expect it when you guys came into grade nine, which was a nice... Wouldn't you say, Simmons, was like a breath of fresh air to have this young group?
Yeah, it was. Well, it's difficult. In grade nine, you really don't know anyone. You haven't built any foundation yet. And I would say by probably when we're getting just around January, when we're getting around to, turning around after our exams, we could see that it's a group that lived and breathed. There was a specialness to them. But to say that we knew we were going to go on the run that we did, absolutely not.
Yeah, I know.
But there's another reality. I think you pointed out really well. This was a group that was internally loyal to themselves for the most part.
Right.
And when I say that, there are a lot of athletes and a lot of individuals that will go out and they'll play a game and they'll be really crap, but they can't self-reflect. You had the ability to self-reflect, and a lot of athletes don't have that. So when you have that ability to self-reflect, if you have a crappy game, you say you're not going to put yourself in that position. You're not going to put yourself, your teammates in that position. And that's half the battle for coaching, because you don't want to be on a person when you already know they're at their lowest peak, but they're bound to resolve and be resilient. And that's what you guys offered us. You offered us the ability sometimes to reassess how we looked at things, how we shared our the pitfalls of things. And I know we're here talking about what you got from us. Hell, we got a lot from you guys. Let's make no mistake.
Absolutely. Now I want to pivot a little bit and talk about some adult issues and try to relate it to what were the theme of life in basketball. So we've gone through a lot of change in the world and excuse me. So this theme of Black Lives Matter, I want to get your take, because Asari and I never really got a chance to discuss this as adults now. And some of us come from different backgrounds. How do you navigate some of the issues? Did you face these same issues when you were younger?
I'll jump in. I think so. Yeah. I think even more so now it's prominent for me because I'm in the world of finance and I've been in it for the last 6 years. And I, you know, all the job interviews and all the, you know, opportunities that I've had in my career, I always make it a statement to say that, listen, I chose a field that I know that there's not very many people that look like me in. So I'm looking to make a difference.
So hold on. You were making a conscious effort. You knew that going in, you're thinking this beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah, I already knew that. I'm like, there's not anybody really, even growing up, you never really see anybody that looks like you in a bank.
That's what I want people to understand. Mm-hmm. That's impact. Simmons, would you not agree that that's impactful on young men to have to actually, so for example, me, that would never cross my mind if I had to go into a bank and work for a bank. I'm not thinking that. And we've had so many debates about systemic racism and with my friends and saying, but everybody has the same opportunity. But that's the difference, right? What Matthew just said.
Yeah.
Do you understand, Simmons?
I mean, at the time, there was not that kind of a circumstance where people were connecting to that in our school on a broader basis. The whole perception of inequities was not there. It was that if you were, let's say, a Black male or an East Indian male or whatever else, I wasn't the problem. You're the problem.
Right.
And, you know, so.
So can you finish, Matthew? Go ahead now. I just want people to understand that as a Black man, you're thinking this.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been blessed with my upbringing. Like, even though, and I've had my fair share of issues like anybody else, but my mom always instilled in me that because of, you know, my genetic makeup, obviously, I have to know how to conduct myself in every situation. I have to be the most adaptable. So even though I'm with people that look different from me, I'm always perceived a certain way. So I have to be able to, you know, kind of just know how to manage and work.
And that's what I want the listeners to know. That's systemic racism. What Matthew just said, he's got to be conscious about adapting and behaving a certain way all the time. Well said. Well said. So how are you adapting now in the bank? You're fine?
I mean, to be honest with you, it's funny enough that we're having this conversation because I actually was introduced by Dre's wife, actually Ashley, to a leader in the women's initiative. And she also happens to be of the East Indian descent as well. And she made a statement herself saying, listen, like there's really not enough leadership or even just any wherewithal that, you know, diversity, inclusion, it's a great title, but there's really nothing behind it. It's kind of like an empty statement. And I told her very honestly, I said, listen, like, even though like with everything that went on with Black Lives Matter, it seems as if we got lumped into all the other issues as well. So when they wanted to do awareness, they jumped us in with Black Lives Matter / Indigenous Children's Reform / like there was like six other different issues. I'm like, not to say that I'm looking for self notoriety, but at the same time, all those individual issues deserve their own respect.
Yeah, it just seems like a window dressing. We're optics. We're gonna just
exactly.
do this. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I think one of the issues is that each specific groups have their own particular issues, and you can't necessarily group a set of groups and expect to get it out of there if you're serious,
right? You know,
or support.
So, if I can turn now to Sukhpreet and Andre, Andre, you have a son, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How do you teach him? As a young Black, you're going to grow up as a young Black man in this world.
Yeah. So, well, he's mixed Vietnamese, Chinese, because my wife is Vietnamese. So, for starters, he has your textured hair, coach. So
mine,
yeah, he doesn't look black at all. At first look, you look at him, he looks like you could be fucking Alex Rodriguez's kid,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. But,
just knowing that, again, like a lot of these celebrities are coming out now, and these black celebrities are coming out now, and they're saying, listen, like I have to have these conversations with my children about, you know, if they get pulled over, or if they're in a job interview setting, or if they're in a room and they're the only black ones there, like this is the way that you need to present yourself, this is the way you need to speak, this is how you need to come across. And so just knowing that he does have that African-American in him, I will have that conversation with him when it comes time. But also, I think for me, it was almost like I was uncomfortable with that aspect, that if I walked into a room and I was the only black person there, I felt a little bit uncomfortable, just feeling like I don't fit in. And that's not something I would want him to feel. I would want.
So did you feel judged? Did you feel judged or just uncomfortable?
To an extent, I felt it was almost burdensome. I think because of the way that I speak, and the way that, you know, I grew up playing hockey. A lot of comments, side comments would have the underlying tone of, oh, but you're not really black. Like, yeah, your skin color is black, but you're not really. And that the insinuation that, like, you know,
that sounds ignorant. Why would they say
exactly,
that?
Exactly. And these are things that I'm sure Sari has heard it. I'm sure Matthew's heard it. If you remember Oswald, I know Oswald and I have had this conversation a number of times as well. And it's like, how do you respond to somebody saying that to you, you know, and what is the appropriate response? Is it anger? Is it just kind of shaking your head and walking away? Or is that just what a number of people think? And it's something we have to deal with.
Well, what was the conclusion? What did you and Ozzy come up with?
I think it's just that we feel bad for those people who think that, or who say those right. types of things. They obviously don't know. They're obviously, as you said, very ignorant. So we just chalk it up to that. And there's no sense in diving deeper into it with them, because again, they just don't get it.
Did we have a white guy on our team?
We had Peter in grade 9.
Grade 10.
Oh, grade 10?
Peter. Yeah.
Peter! Oh, my. Oh,
Peter in grade 10.
Oh, yeah.
Peter in grade 10. But grade 9, I don't think we had a Caucasian person on our team.
Yeah. Did you guys, I think Sari and I talked about this, and he gave me a funny response, but did you feel like I treated you guys differently because you were from different ethnic backgrounds?
No, not at all.
No, never.
No.
Because and I don't know. Because even Miss Pugliese, Miss Jackson, would have. I had her on the podcast talking about Black Lives Matter, and she had discussion with her husband, who's white, and they have a mixed child as well. And she would tell her husband, because her husband would say, "I don't see color," and she would say, "Well, that's the problem. You better see color because it exists." So I understood what she was saying. Now, I saw color when I was coaching you guys, but it's just basketball. I was just coaching basketball players. And I wanted that to really resonate with you. The fact that we're all the same here. We are really equitable. And the decisions that I make are based off of what you do each and every day for this team and for yourself. So I would never show favoritism, although Sari said I showed favoritism to Clint. Is that what you guys thought?
Oh, Clint's your son. We already knew that.
I had a topic now that I've been doing, a couple topics on violence against women and how the inequality exists, even in like the workforce with pay. So I want you guys to go back to your high school days as basketball players. Can we agree that unintentionally, but you think you're a little bit of a hot shot if you're on the basketball team in high school? Would that be safe?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Like, you're the, not to sound cliche, but you guys are the cool guys. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so The violence against women episode was an eye opener for me as well. Basically, 50% of all the women you know in your life right now, just think about all the women you know, 50% of those women are being abused. Okay, that's the stark statistic. Now, Sukhpreet, you have a daughter. Okay. Think back. Did you ever mistreat certain females, friends, or whatever that you kind of regret? Or was there some moment, this aha moment, this realization where this is not happening anymore? I'm not going to be speaking like this, acting like this, and just be as free as you want. I want to start with Sukhpreet because he has a daughter now. And I think it hits home when you become a father.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this world and its injustices towards females?
You definitely think about it a lot when you have a daughter. I certainly do, because I think it's no surprise that a lot of women, especially a lot of strong women who are trying to progress and focus on their careers, will always talk, and there's a common theme that they always think there's a ceiling for women.
So you hear this?
I hear it all the time. You know, I even hear.
Where do you were? Aren't you in the financial sector?
I am as well. Yeah. And you know, I'll, being fully candid, the strongest and the smartest people I ever met were women. But sometimes you don't, and that's me being completely honest.
Right.
And I just find.
But they're maybe, not. It's not reflected in their pay, though.
No, it's not. And, you know, I think for me, I think the biggest thing that I focus on is I reflect on my childhood, and obviously her childhood would be drastically different than mine. She might actually see a restaurant before grade 9, but
right.
it's a lot right. different.
No, I get it.
It's not even comparable. I think learning to be strong, but also learning to be vulnerable, because I think people, and I learning from these guys, is I think women who learn to be vulnerable with their friends, you know, they can avoid making decisions that can change things forever. There's a cuteness to learning and understanding things and, you know, really progressing. So it's something that, you know, I haven't truly figured it out. She's 5 months, but
I know
it's impactful for me a lot, because you know, there's obviously things I think about that I'm sure I can't speak on these guys, but I can relate. And you wish you didn't do that. You're like, oh, you know, I was an idiot. Like, who did I think I was? Like, that was probably someone's daughter.
Are you saying the way you perhaps treated?
Yes. Like, you know, not physically, obviously, but it doesn't matter. One thing you learn when you grow up is it doesn't have to be physical. Like, sometimes you can really impact someone's life by doing, even saying something verbal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what's not talked about enough. And I think that's where this mental health is getting the attention it deserves, I think, now, because people may be more impacted by something you say verbally to them than they will be if you do something physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, really trying to teach her to be strong and know that she has a safe place to come home and talk, because I feel as though the one thing, at least a lot of myself and my friends, now, maybe not on this call, but you feel like you can't always come home and talk about issues that may be going on. So I think in a sense, you guys were there for us. And all I always hope is she either feels safe to come home to me and talk about things because it's inevitable, or she has a Tucci or a Simmons because it's irreplaceable.
Andre, you have a sister. Has that shaped your perspective on women? And how you treat them and your approach as a husband, as a brother?
Definitely. And my sister was a huge influence in the home growing up, along with my mom. And my mom made sure that my sister and I were always tight. And to this day, my sister and I are still tight. And I can thank my mom for that. But seeing my sister grow up and be in relationships and see how her significant other is treating her, it definitely makes me reflect on times that I was an idiot and immature in situations. And I can offer her honest advice as to, you know, what potential like, what could this guy potentially be thinking in saying what he's saying to my sister or in his actions or something like that? And kind of just speaking off of what Sook was saying is the vulnerability aspect of it all. It's so key and it's so important to showcase that with your significant other. But that takes time, that takes effort, that takes practice, especially depending how you grew up. It's not an easy
characteristic. Because you have a son, okay? And now it's not lost on me that it's males that are very, very, very small fragment of the population are females abusing males. It's males abusing females. So you have to teach. Now it's important that you teach your child how they're supposed to conduct themselves through modeling. And have you ever hit your kid?
No.
Do you intend to or no?
I joke around about it when he's being, you know, naughty or something like that. But I honestly don't think I could bring myself to do it.
All right, let's get to our question segment. And guys, thanks again for coming on and sharing your stories, because I don't know, it's just like I always say, it's important we hopefully learn something through just sharing. Would you guys say those were the best time? I know now we're different, but like how can you express how good those times were? Just let's end off that before we get into our game.
I just use one word to describe it, and I'd probably say transformative. Those are probably the most transformative years of my life.
Sure.
For sure.
Nice.
Yes.
What?
Let's start with Andre. Which person out of this group on this call would most likely not pay on a first date?
Oh, shit. I'm only saying this because I think he can be entitled, and I'm gonna say a sorry.
a sorry. Who would you say?
Sook. Not now, but like if we go back, I would say Sook.
Why? Because he's cheap.
Yeah, he was frugal a little bit.
Sookpreet, would you agree with that?
I would say I buy things that are needed.
I love it. Who would you, Clint, who would you say was the best passer on the team?
It was a toss-up for me between a Corey and Sook, but I gave it to Sook.
Sookpreet?
Yeah.
Super, you did drop dimes.
I did.
What was your most memorable game?
For me,
Raps of Finals.
Go ahead, Matt.
Sorry, I said Raps of Finals because I remember the speech after the game.
Would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
I was never the most talented on the team. I played so many other sports. Basketball's kind of like my last, I guess, skilled. I was just very athletic. But you said, like, listen, like, a lot of guys stepped up and you pointed me out. So Matthew had the best game he's ever had for me playing, even though we didn't win. But I was... like we were talking about it before, the fact that Clint had the last shot, I was ready to live or die with whatever the outcome was.
Right, right. That's so cool. That is so cool. What about you, Sookpreet?
I'm more curious about Asari's answer.
Go ahead, Asari.
Well, my most memorable game, I'd probably say like it was grade 12. I think it was the Ottawa tournament. I think it was the very first game. I think I had 19 points. I missed maybe like one shot in the game. And that was just big for me in general, just because like I was excited to score points. And it was like grade 12, thought I was better. And so when you're seeing the results, like you feel really, really good.
You feel like the hard work pays off, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Sorry,
the fact that you're counting your own stats.
He remembers every play. He remembers exactly how many points he's had, how many rebounds, how many assists.
He has a journal of every game, every play, every moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys, anybody else have a most memorable game?
I think for me,
I'll give, I'll okay, go so ahead, go Clint. Ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say two games. It was the Pinky Lewis game versus Cardinal Newman. Coach, you got kicked out, and you were coaching from the bleachers. You were coaching from the bleachers. I remember, like, me, Asari, and Ju, so we were having good games. And I think we still lost that one, but like, it was a very exciting game. And I remember a first round, a grade 12 playoffs versus Clarkson. Like, I was having a horrible game. Corey fouled out, and Shanika hit that a baseline shot. To So I remember leading to that moment, like, I was very nervous because, like, holy cow, like, we're down, and this is it. Last year with the group, and Shanika hit that shot, and that was it.
I just want to say, I really, my temperament was very, very calm demeanor, especially later on in my coaching career. I would always be sitting down, but it just had a, you know how we spoke about the whole Black Lives Matter? I just felt like when we went, whenever we went to those suburban areas, it's just, I felt it. I felt that. I remember listening to a parent say, "Oh my God, look at us. We're playing like them now." Yeah, I'm like, what the heck does, like, what's that mean? We're playing like them.
Actually, the worst place was, I thought, was Christmas tournament at Cathedral.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, Hamilton. Hamilton. Yeah. Hamilton was an issue. I hated it. That's where I got ejected.
What about you, Sukhpreet? Which one do you pick? Which game was your most memorable?
You're not going to believe the one I pick, but you would think it's the one where, as of today, if you think it'd be one of the ones where you like hit a game-winning shot or you do something that, you know, you can talk about for some time. The one that really stuck out to me, and I think it's partially due to a lot of the reflection I've had, is there was this one game, I think we were playing in Toronto, and there was like 10 seconds left. We were down by 1 point, not even two. And Adrian was posting up. I can't remember the team. Adrian was posting up one-on-one. And
Adrian Derrick.
He was practically
wide open. He had the ball in his hand?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
I had the ball in my hand. He was practically wide open. And I remember looking at him dead in the eyes. And I shot it anyways. Like any rational person would have said, like, he has a better opportunity to make that shot than you do. I honestly still think about that game. I don't know why, but I do. And I think it's because I shot it. And I think you looked at me like, "Are you serious?" Like, and I feel as though the majority of my high school career, I had the green light to shoot. But even that one, you were like, you gave me a look like, "Boy, that was one dumb decision." And, and I don't know. I thought about it for a long time. And I think for a lot of those years in high school, for the years of grade 9 and 10, the reason why it was so memorable, again, for me, was because it was very transformative in the way I looked at things and how I approach things. Because I think up until that point, it never really hit home to me. Like, I remember going into a game, and I would always joke to Asari and Andre, but, like, you know, for every joke they say there's a partial truth. I'd be like, you know, I'm going to go out there and get mine, and then I'm going to make sure we still win. And like, I honestly remember being upset if we won and I didn't score over 20. Like, I would legitimately be upset. Like, I would lose sleep. And so I think that game, I really understood that, you know, it talks about all this stuff about like Black Lives Matter and being an actual good leader. You understand that day I truly understood after that, and I certainly live it now every day at work, where it's like, you know, you don't really progress to the next level when you just worry about yourself. Like, if you can make everyone around you much better, and you're going to go a lot further. And I feel like that game hit home. I'm like, if I had just passed it to him.
Was he literally wide open?
He was practically. The look on his face, I won't forget. Like, he was in disbelief. Like, I shot it over two people and like airballed it. Like, it was... It was one of the stupidest shots I've taken in high school. I remember Andre used to give me the same look. Like, he would look like he would put his hands wide open and be like, "Really? Really?" And yeah. So anyways, I don't know why, but that's the most memorable game for me.
I really miss those days. Those were just, I don't know. It was like a confluence of everything, time in our life, circumstance, the characters of the team. Wouldn't you agree, Simmons? Just like, I don't know, something was right, even though we didn't win a championship.
Well, we won a championship.
Absolutely.
We won a championship, and everyone respected us. And I could have been more proud to be associated with a group of players. And, you know, I've won championships now at school, but those are the teams we always talk about. We always get back to.
Yeah. Okay, last question. What is your most memorable moment in your lifetime up to this point?
I'll let the others go first. I think I have a couple, but I'll let the others go first.
No, I think my most memorable probably was when I think when I graduated from university. Just because I felt at that time like it was a long road and it was tough. And I changed my major 3 times from kinesiology to criminology, then I finally graduated with a degree in information technology, and like it felt like real success at that time.
How come you kept changing?
So I started in kin. I thought that's what I wanted to do because I wanted to be a chiropractor. Then I didn't realize after first year like not what I wanted to do. I switched over to criminology. I thought it was interesting, and then I saw the information technology program, and I'm like, I just love computers. Like, this is for me, and I made that switch.
Clint?
I think for me, just moving out here, like just moving to Alberta, just a lot of sacrifices made. I think it's been like 5 years from now. So just leaving friends, leaving a family, and just like knowing the unknown, and didn't really have a plan like per se, but just knew like I wanted to be here just for like 1 year. Cause at that time I was working like a menial job, and like I didn't have like, I guess like a vision. I guess I was hitting that a midlife crisis. And
so what made you go out to Alberta?
I just had the opportunity. I just at the time I was working a menial job. I couldn't get into the field that I wanted to in Toronto. And I just from a recommendation of a friend, told me to go to Alberta. And then I worked up north. I didn't know nothing about Alberta, but like at the time of my life, like I was ready to do so. I had no significant partner, so I took the risk, and just one thing just led to another.
Right.
And I don't see myself coming back. So,
Matt.
Yeah, mine was kind of just more sentimental. I wouldn't say favorite moment, but I think just something that's always I've cherished is just like very simplistic. So for me, it's just spending time with my grandfather. Anybody that knows me, that he's on a pedestal that can never be touched. So to have time with him now as a man, I was very fortunate that like he kind of raised me. So there was a whole maturation process. Like I saw him as my father figure to my grandfather, and now like as a man, just having different types of conversations. So that's probably for me, that's what it is. I don't have any kids yet, so.
Is it in the works or no?
We'll see. The my girlfriend right now keep making things interesting, so we'll see.
Nice, nice. Yeah. All right, Andre, we'll end with you.
Yeah, so obviously one of the most important moments was my son being born, but that's so cliche. I feel like a lot of the important moments in my life have come from traveling. Going to Kenya with my wife for the first time was a huge eye opener. The culture shock that we experienced when we first got there was nothing like we've ever experienced. And then obviously when we got married in Costa Rica, having these guys around and being with family and friends, I think that that's something that Ash and I always talk about. Any opportunity we get, we always bring it up with each other. And even when these guys are around, because the memories that we made and the memories that lasted and the pictures that we still have, it evokes such an emotion. So
Simmons, we'll end with you. What's the most memorable moment in your life up to this point?
Well, it's gotta be my 3 kids. 29-year-old, I watched him play Division II soccer. He's now working for the New York District Attorney's Office in criminology. Middle guy, watched him go to Houston Baptist, play Division I soccer. He's now at law school in Windsor, and the baby went to University of Carolina, or South Carolina, on cheerleading. And she's now an NBA agent, and nice. their biggest client is Jimmy Butler. So she works with Bernie Lee, who's Canadian based. So never would have thought that.
I'm trying to get her on Tucci Talks, but
No, it's okay. but and it's funny, I didn't want to interrupt because the conversation was so rich, but I understand, Andre, exactly what you've talked about in terms of all my kids are biracial. And so they've managed to climb through those potential obstacles, but they're fully aware of the implications of sometimes not being seen as having an identity either way. So.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate the authenticity, and you guys were great. And I really do thank you for being so candid, because that's essentially why we do this, just to have some conversation, and even us through just this experience have that kind of enriching feeling. And my most memorable moment, I hope, is yet to come. That's for me. I'm always thinking the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And we'll see what life has in store for all of us. And maybe we could do this one more time. Maybe even an annual thing, each Christmas special.
That'd be cool.
I feel like all we right. could talk for hours.
Absolutely. Yeah. Too bad we lost Sukhpreet. But as teammates do, we pick up each other and we continue going, plowing forward.
The significance of it is Asari gets the last word.
Yeah, he does.
For once.
But yeah, you know what? I remember Sukhpreet not being the same dude. I totally remember. And that losing that love, because the love for basketball was so enormous. And then just to do a complete 180. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, he said it. He vocalized it. He said,
yeah, I know. At the time you're saying he vocalized
it. At the time, he said it. Because I don't remember. I remember I talked to him differently. And he's just like, I know that I'm not playing in university. So he just shifted his focus.
And I guess you guys respected that.
Yeah. He's always Sukh's been a lot of things, but he's always been 100% unapologetically himself. No matter how you feel about him, you have no choice but to respect that.
You know what? And I want to end on that note, because if anybody out there listening, unapologetic for yourself, be unapologetic and just move forward. As long as you have kind intentions, we can't control what others think of us.
Facts.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Thanks.
See ya.
Take care.
Be unapologetically yourself. I love that. But it has to come with real authentic truth. Your heart needs to be in the right place. And only you know where that is. Man, listening to these boys and seeing how they've matured really feels like we've won a championship. Maybe for anyone out there, this is a good time of the year to reconnect with someone from your past. Maybe you have some unfinished business, unfinished feelings. As Sukhpreet so eloquently put it, our words matter. We can easily hurt the people we love with the words we use. I just want to share a quick aside. I loved all the teams I coached. We were not always successful on the court, but I always dibed to ensure that I was conducting myself in a manner that I expected my players to conduct themselves with as well. And if they didn't, they needed to take full responsibility and be accountable. But at the end of the day, every experience I had with every team was an opportunity for growth. And that's how life is, constant evolution. Anyway, thanks for sticking with me this long. I try to give a little bit of small glimpses, small insights into my life through some storytelling. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. I really felt privileged speaking to these young men, and it was at a time in my life where it meant a lot. So I want to thank all those young boys, and they are now men with their own responsibilities and own families. I hope I can do it again with them at some point. Next week, I will be speaking to another fine young man, as I will have my older brother on the podcast, and we will be discussing life for him as a big brother and everything in between. And I'm just curious to see what stories surface. Maybe the story where in, I think, episode 2, where I talked about me knocking him out.
Finish him! Outstanding.
Might surface. I don't know. We'll see. Don't forget to check out the website, TucciTalk75.com.
please have a Merry Christmas. For non-Christians, enjoy the time with loved ones, and I will be back real soon. As always, be safe, have fun, dance as if nobody is watching, and never forget, as I always try, you know what you gotta bring. That's right, a little cheer to your day.